Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something fascinating, the body's unsung defenders, you know, the lymphatic system and how it ties into immunity.
It's a great topic, often overlooked, but absolutely vital.
Exactly. So our mission today is to sort of pull back the curtain on how this all works, shine a light on this system that maybe doesn't get the headlines.
And reveal some pretty surprising things about how we stay healthy.
Consider this your fast track, yeah, to really getting how your internal security works. And right off the bat, here's something Dr. Hoffman points out that might surprise you.
Yes, the immune system.
It isn't actually like an official organ system, not like the circulatory system or the nervous system.
That's right. It's more of a functional concept, how the body achieves immunity.
That was a real aha moment for me from Dr. Hoffman's work. It's not one organ, it's networked, spread out.
Precisely. It uses structures and processes from, well, almost all the other organ systems, but the lymphatic system, it plays an absolutely central role in the whole operation.
And it's amazing how it's probably the most, you know, forgotten organ system. We all know blood vessels.
Right. Arteries, veins.
But this whole other network, these lymphatic vessels running right alongside them, many people just don't realize.
And Dr. Hoffman makes a really key distinction about their structure. The circulatory system, that's a closed loop. No beginning, no end, really.
Just keeps flowing.
But lymphatic vessels are different. He calls them blinded vessels. They actually have a beginning. They start somewhere.
Okay, so they're not a loop. What are they doing then? What's this lymph they're picking up? And why is it so, so important?
Well, lymph is basically fluid that leaks out of your blood capillaries. See, even though we call it a closed circulatory system, it's not perfectly sealed. Things like hormones need to get out.
Right, to reach tissues.
Exactly. But just general fluid leaks out, too, into the spaces between your cells. If that fluid just stayed there, yeah, you'd get massive swelling. Edema. And Dr. Hoffman is very clear that would kill us pretty quickly. The lymphatic system is constantly collecting that leaked fluid. It's essential cleanup.
That's kind of terrifying to think about. So how does it prevent that? Dr. Hoffman describes the flow, right?
He does. It's quite elegant, actually. Starts in these tiny, microscopic, blind-ended lymphatic capillaries. They just soak up the fluid.
Okay.
Then that fluid, now called lymph, flows into bigger and bigger vessels, like streams feeding into a river.
Makes sense.
And eventually, these main lymphatic ducts dump the lymph back into your bloodstream, specifically into big veins up in your shoulders, the subclavian veins, so the fluid gets returned.
But it's not just about returning fluid, is it? You mentioned something else.
Yes. Along this whole pathway, Dr. Hoffman emphasizes these structures called lymph nodes. They're strategically placed.
Okay.
And their main job isn't really just returning the fluid, it's immunity. They're surveillance hubs, checking the lymph as it passes through.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, delving into the design. Those starting points, the lymphatic capillaries, how are they built for this collection job?
Dr. Hoffman gives a great description. The cells making up the capillary walls overlap, he says, like shingles on a roof.
Oh, interesting.
This creates little flap valves. Fluid can push its way in easily, but the flaps mostly stop it from leaking back out. It's a one-way street.
Clever.
And there are these tiny connective tissue filaments that sort of anchor the capillaries, holding them open so they can keep collecting fluid.
And Dr. Hoffman also pointed out this weird map of drainage, didn't he? It's not symmetrical.
Right. It's fascinating. Think of your body in four quarters. Your right upper part, head, neck, right arm, all that drains into the right subclavian vein.
Just that one quarter.
Yeah. But the other three quarters, left side of the head, neck, arm, and both legs, the whole torso that all drains via the big thoracic duct into the left subclavian vein.
So most of the body drains to the left side.
Huh. It's effective, though. And that flow leads us right to those lymph nodes we mentioned. Dr. Hoffman says there are hundreds clustered in places like your armpit, the axillary nodes, or your groin inguinal nodes.
Places you might feel get swollen if you're sick.
Exactly. And the key thing he stresses is that all lymph has to filter through these nodes. There's no bypass.
So everything gets checked?
Everything. Anything carried in that lymph gets exposed to what's inside the nodes.
And what is inside? How are they built to filter so well?
Yeah.
Dr. Hoffman described their structure, right?
He did. They have more vessels bringing lymph in afferent vessels than vessels taking it out afferent vessels. Plus, the outgoing ones are wider.
So it creates a bottleneck, slows things down.
Precisely. Gives the cells inside time to do their job. Inside, you've got a capsule, then the outer cortex with follicles packed with immune cells and a central medulla.
And the crucial part is those cells inside, the specialized cells.
That's the core of it. As Dr. Hoffman explains, these are mainly white blood cells, leukocytes. They are the ones responsible for surveilling that liquid, for invading microorganisms and other things that could do you harm. They're the guards.
But the system's defenses aren't just in the nodes and vessels, are they? Dr. Hoffman mentioned other spots, too.
Absolutely. Think about your throat, the pharyngeal region. You've got three major pairs of tonsils there.
Yes, tonsils.
Packed with protective white blood cells, perfectly placed to catch stuff coming in through your mouth or nose, an early warning system.
Makes sense. And then the thymus.
Right, the thymus nestled there between the two lungs. Dr. Hoffman notes it's most active during youth and shrinks as we age. It's crucial, though.
Why?
It's the training ground for a very special type of white blood cell, T lymphocytes. The T actually stands for thymus. That's where they mature.
Okay, T for thymus. Got it. What about the spleen?
The spleen. Tucked way up in the extreme upper left corner of the abdomen. Its big job, according to Dr. Hoffman, is filtering blood, specifically filtering out old, dead, or no longer working red blood cells.
Why do red blood cells wear out so fast?
Well, Dr. Hoffman explains they don't have a nucleus, so they can't repair themselves. Plus, they get beat up just squeezing through tiny capillaries all the time.
Tough life for a red blood cell.
Indeed. And then Dr. Hoffman also mentions pears, patches, scattered lymphoid tissue in the intestines and the appendix.
The appendix? I thought that was useless.
Often called vestigial, yeah, and worm-like. But it does contain lymphoid tissue. Both pears, patches, and the appendix are positioned to guard against pathogens entering via our food. It shows how comprehensive the defense network is.
Okay, so we have this whole network. Vessels, nodes, tonsils, thymus, spleen. How does it all actually fight things off? Dr. Hoffman splits immunity into two main types, right? Innate and adaptive.
Exactly. And understanding these definitions from Dr. Hoffman is key. Innate means inborn. It's the stuff you're born with. And crucially, it's nonspecific. It reacts the same way no matter what the invader is.
Like a general alarm system.
Pretty much. Then you have adaptive immunity. This does adapt. It's specific, it targets particular pathogens, and it learns, it accumulates over your lifetime based on what you encounter.
Which is why kids get sick more often. Their adaptive system is still learning.
That's precisely the idea Dr. Hoffman explains. Their adaptive defenses are still being built up through exposure.
Okay, that makes sense. So Dr. Hoffman breaks it down further into three lines of defense.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two are innate.
Correct. The first line is your external barriers. The walls of the castle, if you like.
So, like skin.
Skin is a huge one. Dr. Hoffman points out it's not just a physical mechanical barrier. It also has the acid mantle, slightly acidic secretions that stop bacteria growing, and sebum, which is bactericidal. Plus, the keratin in skin resists chemicals.
Wow, skin's doing a lot. What else is in that first line?
Mucous membranes. In your mouth, throat, nose, other openings. They produce sticky mucus to trap microbes.
Right.
Then you have hairs, like in your nostrils, filtering particles, and cilia, tiny hairs in your trachea, constantly sweeping mucus upwards to your throat so you can swallow it.
Swallowing the bad stuff, doesn't it just move the problem?
Ah, but then it hits the stomach's gastric juice. Dr. Hoffman describes the stomach's low pH as an inhospitable place that kills most things.
Okay, that's clever. Any others?
Yes. The vagina also has an acid mantle similar to the skin. And your tears, lacrimal secretions, contain an enzyme called lysozyme that destroys microorganisms. It's a pretty robust outer defense.
Definitely. So what if something gets past all that? That's where the second line, still innate, comes in.
Exactly. Now we're talking internal but still generalized defenses. Dr. Hoffman details several key players here.
Like what?
First, phagocytic cells. These are cells that patrol your tissues, surveilling the body, looking for things that shouldn't be there. When they find an invader, they engulf it phagocytosis and break it down. The eaters.
Essentially, yes. Then there are natural killer cells, or NK cells. These are really interesting. Dr. Hoffman explains they target your own body cells.
Wait, why would they do that?
If those cells have become infected by viruses or have become cancerous, NK cells recognize these compromised cells and kill them, stopping infections from spreading or tumors from forming. Vital quality control.
Okay, that's crucial. What else?
Antimicrobial proteins produced by your cells to inhibit microbes. There's also complement, a group of proteins in your blood plasma that can directly kill microorganisms by lyophilizing them, splitting them open, or marking them for phagocytes.
Sounds powerful.
It is. and interferons. These are signal molecules. If a cell gets infected by a virus, it releases interferons as a warning to nearby healthy cells. It's like sending out an alert, virus incoming, prepare yourselves.
A cellular heads up. Cool. And fever, that's part of this too. Yes, fever, caused by substances called pyrogens. Dr. Hoffman calls it an adaptive response, but careful here, he means adaptive in the sense that it helps the body adapt to fight, not adaptive immunity specifically.
Okay. How does being hot help?
It speeds up metabolic reactions, including your immune responses, and importantly, the higher temperature can make it harder for some pathogens to reproduce effectively. It creates a hostile environment. Antipyretics, like aspirin, work by lowering that temperature.
Got it. So fever is uncomfortable, but generally helpful.
In moderation, yes. It's a sign your innate defenses are working hard.
Okay, the inflammatory response that feels like a really concrete example of this innate system kicking into gear, Dr. Hoffman's example of a cut, is perfect.
It really illustrates the process well. As Dr. Hoffman lays it out, when you get injured, cells are damaged, blood proteins are exposed. This triggers the release of chemical signals, things like kinins and histamine.
And these chemicals cause immediate effects we can see and feel, right?
Absolutely. Dr. Hoffman highlights vasodilation. The blood vessels in the area get wider. More blood rushes in.
Which causes?
Two of the classic signs. Redness from the extra red blood cells and heat, because the blood brings body heat from your core to the surface.
Okay, redness and heat. What about the other signs?
The chemicals also make the capillaries in the area more leaky. Fluid seeps out into the tissues. That causes swelling or edema.
And the swelling causes?
Pressure on nerve endings, which leads to pain. And Dr. Hoffman points out that pain, while unpleasant, is protective. It tells you, hey, don't use this part right now. Let it heal.
Redness, heat, swelling, pain, the four cardinal signs. It all flows logically.
It does. And these chemical signals also act like a beacon, recruiting specific white blood cells like neutrophils and monocytes to the scene.
How do they get there?
Dr. Hoffman mentions chemotaxis. They follow the chemical trail. And diapedesis, they literally squeeze themselves out between the cells of the blood vessel walls to reach the damaged tissue.
Wow. And you mentioned stopping bleeding earlier, too.
Right. That's hemostasis, also triggered by the injury. Proteins in the blood activate and form clots to plug the damage. It all happens very quickly.
Okay, back to those phagocytes arriving on the scene. Dr. Hoffman described how they actually eat the invaders, right?
Yes, he details phagocytosis very clearly. The phagocyte, say a macrophage, extends its membrane around the foreign particle or microbe.
It engulfs it.
Right, forming a little bubble inside itself called a phagosome. Then this phagosome fuses with another internal bubble called a lysosome.
And the lysosome has?
Digestive enzymes, powerful ones. They break down the contents of the phagosome, dismantling the invader and making it harmless. Dr. Hoffman even notes the raw materials can often be recycled by the cell.
Efficient. Okay, so that covers the innate side, the immediate general response. Now for the really sophisticated part, the third line of defense, adaptive immunity.
This is where the system gets truly specific and develops memory. The key players here, as Dr. Hoffman outlines, are lymphocytes, T cells, and B cells and their products, mainly antibodies.
Antibodies, those are proteins.
Yes, proteins made by immune cells, specifically designed to recognize unique markers, called antigens, on foreign materials. Think of antigens as the face of the invader. And other cells, like macrophages, act as antigen-presenting cells. They show these faces to the lymphocytes.
And where do these T and B cells come from? Dr. Hoffman explained their origins.
He did. All blood cells start as hematopoietic stem cells in your red marrow. T lymphocytes travel to the thymus to mature, hence the T. B lymphocytes mature right there in the marrow, then move to lymph nodes and other tissues.
And they start off naive.
Right, naive but immunocompetent, meaning they're mature and ready, but they haven't met their specific antigen match yet.
How can they possibly be ready for any antigen they might meet?
Ah, that's the incredible part Dr. Hoffman explains. Antibody diversity. Your body can make literally millions of different kinds of antibodies.
Millions?
The genes for antibodies are unique. They get scrambled or rearranged as B cells develop. So each different kind of antibody can recognize its own kind antigen. And this huge variety is produced just randomly in your body all the time, just waiting for a match.
So we have this massive random library of potential antibody shapes ready to go.
Exactly. Which leads us right to how vaccines work. based on Dr. Hoffman's explanation.
Okay, connect the dots.
Vaccines introduce harmless antigens, maybe inactivated viruses, or just pieces of them, misshapen pathogens. They can't cause disease, but they trigger the adaptive immune system.
So your body finds the matching B cells from that random library.
Yes, and it inspires the same kind of active immunity. You build an army of antibodies and, crucially, memory cells, specifically for that pathogen without ever having been sick with it. It's like a training exercise.
Brilliant. Okay, so let's focus on humoral immunity, the antibody part and the body fluids.
Yeah.
How does a B cell react when it finally meets its antigen match?
Dr. Hoffman explains that when a B cell surface antibody binds its specific antigen, that B cell gets activated. It starts dividing rapidly, forming a clone, thousands of identical B cells.
All making the same antibody.
Precisely. And this clone differentiates into two main cell types.
Which are?
First, plasma cells. These are antibody factories. They fully secrete the antibody out into the blood and lymph where it can circulate and find the invaders.
Okay, the active fighters and the second type.
Memory B cells. In these, the antibodies mostly stay on the surface. These cells don't secrete much antibody right away, but they persist long-term, maybe for years, even a lifetime, dividing occasionally.
Ah, and that's the key to long-term immunity and right. Why vaccines last.
Exactly. These memory cells are why they give you immunological memory.
Which explains the difference Dr. Hoffman mentioned between the primary response and secondary response.
Yes. Primary response is the first time you encounter an antigen. It takes time to find the right B cells, build the clone, make plasma cells. It's relatively slow and maybe not super strong. But if you encounter that same antigen again later, the secondary response kicks in. Those memory B cells are already there, ready to go. They activate much faster, produce more antibodies more quickly. It's a much stronger, faster response.
Which is why you often don't get as sick or sick at all the second time around.
Precisely. Your body remembers.
Dr. Hoffman also described the antibody structure itself, didn't he? The Y shape.
He did. That Y shape is characteristic. At the tips of the two arms of the Y, you have the binding places. This is the variable part. It's different for each specific antibody, allowing it to bind its unique antigen.
And the rest of the Y.
That's the constant region. It's similar across antibodies of the same class and determines how the antibody functions once it binds the antigen.
So once an antibody binds its antigen, what does it actually do? Dr. Hoffman listed several mechanisms.
Yes. Several ways they neutralize threats. Neutralization is a big one. The antibodies basically surround the pathogen or toxin, shroud it or cover it, blocking it from binding to or harming your cells.
Like putting handcuffs on it.
Kind of. Then there's agglutination. Antibodies have two binding sites, so they can grab onto two separate invaders, clumping them together, makes them easier targets. Think of bad blood transfusions, that's agglutination of red blood cells.
Okay, clumping.
And precipitation. If the antigen is dissolved, antibodies binding to it can make it fall out of solution, forming solid clumps that are easier to clear.
And all of these neutralizing, clumping, precipitating, they help the phagocytes, right?
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman emphasizes this. All these actions enhance phagocytosis. They make the invaders much easier for phagocytic cells to grab and engulf. They're essentially tagging the trash for pickup.
Nice analogy. Yeah. Any other antibody actions?
Yes. Antibodies can also activate the complement system we mentioned earlier.
The proteins that can split cells open.
Right. Antibody binding can trigger complement to form a membrane attack complex, or MA. This punches holes in the cell's membrane, causing the invader cell to basically swell up and explode.
Brutal, but effective.
Very. And tying things together again, Dr. Hoffman notes that complement activation and other antibody effects also enhance inflammation, including triggering local histamine release.
Which brings us back to swelling, leakiness, and why antihistamines work.
You got it. It's all interconnected.
Okay, so to wrap up this section, Dr. Hoffman categorized how we actually get this humoral immunity. Active versus passive.
Correct. It's a really useful distinction. Active immunity is when your body does the work, makes its own antibodies.
Okay.
This can be naturally acquired. You just get sick. You're naturally exposed to whatever the pathogen is, like catching a cold. Or it can be artificially acquired through a vaccine, intentional exposure to trigger your own response.
Makes sense. Your body is active in both cases. So passive is.
Passive immunity is when you receive antibodies made by someone or something else. Your body doesn't make them.
How does that happen?
Naturally acquired passive immunity is crucial for babies. Antibodies pass from mother to fetus, across the placenta, and also through breast milk. Gives the baby protection while its own immune system develops.
A gift from mom.
Exactly. And then there's artificially acquired passive immunity. This is when someone gets an injection of antibodies, maybe antibodies collected from another person who recovered from a disease. It provides immediate but temporary protection.
Because your body isn't making its own memory cells.
Precisely. The borrowed antibodies eventually break down.
Wow. It's just incredible. The layers, the complexity, the way it all works together. Dr. Hoffman's material really lays out this elegant defense system we have.
It truly is remarkable. From the simple barriers to the incredibly sophisticated learning and memory of the adaptive system, it's a constant dynamic process protecting us.
And understanding it, like Dr. Hoffman showed, really highlights our resilience. And of course, the science behind things like vaccines makes so much more sense.
Absolutely. It's leveraging the body's own natural genius.
So here's a thought to leave you with. Considering this constant leaking and returning of lymph, this nonstop surveillance happening inside us, what simple daily things do you think might best support these tireless defenders, even when we don't feel sick? Something to mull over.
A great question to ponder.
A huge thank you for walking us through Dr. Hoffman's insights today. This has been a fantastic deep dive.